You saying you do? Have you met your soulmate?
Theodore glances around the room half jokingly.
Is she here with you tonight? What's her name, Cinderella?
My eyes slowly make the journey to Ben's. I'm not sure I want to hear her name yet. He's eyeing me hard, trading glances with the fingers that are sliding up and down my arm.
She's not here with me,
Ben says.
In fact, I was actually stood up by her today. Waited for over 4 hours, but she never showed.
His words are like icicles, beautiful and sharp as a knife. I swallow the lump in my throat. He actually showed up, even after I told him last year I wasn't coming. His words are doing too many things to me right now, and it feels all wrong since I'm sidled up next to a guy I wish would stop touching me.
What girl is worth waiting 4 hours for?
Theodore says with a laugh. Ben leans back in his seat, but I'm eyeing his every movement. Just this one, he says quietly, to no one in particular. Or maybe his words were only meant for me. Speaking of Amber, or maybe I wasn't speaking of Amber, I can't remember now that Ben is here and my brain isn't functioning properly. But Amber is back. My eyes grow wide when I look up at her. She's looking between me and Ben like one of us is a mirage. I totally get it because I feel the same way. Might just be the alcohol, though. I shake my head and widen my eyes to let her know not to acknowledge that she knows Ben. Hopefully she understands my silent instructions. Glenn is walking up behind her, and I try to do the same with him, but as soon as he reaches the booth, he smiles and yells, "Ben!" He slides in next to him and throws an arm around him like he's just found his best friend.
Yeah, Glenn's drunk. You know this guy?
Theodore says, pointing at Ben. Glenn starts to point at me, and that's when he sees the look on my face. Good thing he's not too drunk to decipher it. He stutters.
We met earlier in the bathroom.
Theodore chokes on his drink.
You met in the bathroom?
I take the opportunity to slide out of the booth in desperate need of a break. This is way too much.
Want me to come with you?
Amber asks, grabbing my elbow. I shake my head. I think we both know I'm hoping Ben follows me so he can explain what the hell he's doing here. I walk quickly toward the bathroom, slightly embarrassed by how fast I just made a break for it. It's funny how a grown adult can just forget how to function properly in the presence of someone else. But I feel like my insides are so hot they're beginning to scorch my bones. My cheeks are warm, my neck is warm, everything is warm. I need to splash water on my face. I walk into the bathroom, and even though I don't need to pee, I do anyway. I'm wearing a skirt that Amber forced me to put on, and it's so easy to use the bathroom when you're in a skirt, it's stupid not to take advantage of the opportunity. Besides, I'm pretty sure I'm getting a cab home right after I punch Ben in the face, so I might as well use the restroom while I'm here. Why am I justifying the fact that I'm peeing? Maybe because I really know all I'm doing is wasting time. I'm not sure I want to step out of the bathroom yet. As I'm washing my hands, I notice how bad they're shaking. I take several calming breaths while I stare at my reflection in the mirror. Looking in the mirror now is a lot different than it was before I met Ben. I don't obsess over my flaws like I used to. The occasional insecurities are still there, but thanks to Ben, I've learned to accept myself for who I am and be grateful that I'm alive. Part of me hates that he gets some of the credit for my confidence because I want to hate him. My life would be so much easier if I could hate him. But the guy is hard to hate when he's had such a positive impact on my life. It's the negative impact he's had on my life for the past year that makes me appreciate Amber for forcing me to make an effort tonight with my appearance. I'm wearing a slinky purple top that brings out the green in my eyes, and my hair has grown a few inches since last year. At least Ben is seeing this version of me, rather than the version of me that was moping on the couch 2 hours ago. I don't want to exact revenge on the guy, but it would be nice if, when he looks at me, he feels as though he missed out. I would feel a little vindicated that he fell in love with another girl if I knew he was experiencing a few pangs of regret. So many questions run through my mind as I finish up at the sink. Why isn't he here with Jordan? Did they break up? Why is he even here? How did he know I'd be here? Or did he just show up by chance? And what was he expecting when he went to that restaurant today, hoping I'd be there? My reflection reveals no answers, so I make the brave journey to the bathroom exit, knowing he's probably out there somewhere, waiting. No sooner than I have the bathroom door open, a hand grips my arm and pulls me further down the hallway, away from the crowd. I don't even have to look at him to know it's him. My whole body feels the familiar hum of electricity that moves between us any time we're together. My back is against a wall, hands are beside my head, his eyes are boring into mine. How serious is it with whale pants back there? Damn it if he doesn't make me laugh right off the bat. I groan. I hate those pants. A crooked, smug grin spreads across his face, but as soon as it appears, it disappears, replaced by a flicker of disappointment. Why didn't you show up today? He asks. I can no longer tell a difference between the beat of my heart and the bass of the music. They're in perfect sync, one no louder than the other. Thanks to Ben's proximity. I told you last year I wasn't going to show up today. I glance down the hallway toward the club. It's dark back here, past the bathrooms, past the people. Somehow in a building full of warm bodies, we have complete privacy. How did you know I'd be here tonight? He gives his head a dismissive shake. The answer to that question isn't nearly as significant as the answer to mine. How serious is it with this guy? His voice is low, his face close to mine. I can feel warmth radiating from his skin. It's hard to concentrate in this kind of distracting environment. I forgot what question you just asked me. I sway a little bit. But his fingers splay out against my hip and he steadies me. He narrows his eyes. Are you drunk? Tipsy, big difference. How's Jordan? I don't know why I say her name with spite. I don't harbor any resentment toward her. Okay, maybe just a little bit. But not much, because Oliver is such a cute kid and it's hard to be mad at someone who can make such a cute kid. Ben sighs, glancing away for a split second. Jordan is fine. They're good. Good, good for them. Good for him and Oliver and their adorable fucking little family. That's nice, Ben. I need to get back to my date. I try to push past him, but he leans in closer, sandwiching me against the wall. His forehead meets the side of my head. He lets out a sigh and, feeling the breath fall from his lips and rush through my hair, forces me to squeeze my eyes shut. Don't be like that, he whispers into my ear. I've been through hell today trying to find you. I cringe from the way his words twist my stomach into knots. He slides his arms around me and pulls me into him. He feels stronger, more defined, even more like a man this year. I'm stiff against him as I ask my next question. Are you still with her? He looks crestfallen as he says,
You know me better than that, Fallon. If I had a girlfriend, I certainly wouldn't be standing here trying to convince you to come home with me.
He studies my face for a reaction, scrolling over each of my features with desire-filled eyes. I try not to notice, but he's pressed against me, my thigh firm between both of his legs. It's obvious by the scorching hardness pressed against my thigh that the look in his eyes is genuine. Feeling him like this again, his mouth dangerously close to mine, reminds me of the night I spent with him. The only night I've ever allowed a man to completely consume me, heart, body, and soul. And the thought of what he was able to do to me that night almost forces me to whimper. But I'm stronger than my hormones. I have to be. I can't go through another heartbreak like the one I'm still healing from. The wounds are still so fresh, it's as if he's clawing them open with his bare hands. Come home with me, he whispers. No. No, 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 Fallon. I shake my head back and forth with immense effort in order to ensure I don't accidentally nod. No, Ben. No. This past year has been the hardest year of my life. You can't expect me to just fall back into step with you because you showed up here tonight. He runs the backs of his fingers across my cheekbone.
I don't expect that, Fallon. But I do pray for it. Every night, down on my knees to any god who will listen.
His words feel like they penetrate the walls of my chest and all the air is let out of my lungs. I close my eyes when his breath grazes my jaw. He's taking advantage of the privacy and my weakness, and I want to punch him for it. But first I just need to know if he tastes the same. If his tongue still moves the same way. If he still touches me like it's a privilege. I'm being supported by a wall behind me and Ben in front of me, but still, when his hand drops to my thigh and his fingers begin slowly raking up my skirt, I feel like I'm about to crash straight to the floor. There's so much that needs to be discussed between us, but for whatever reason, my body wants my mouth to stay shut, so his hand will continue moving. I've missed his touch so much, and even though I've made the effort to go out and try to get over Ben, I'm not sure I could ever find this kind of physical connection with another person. No one makes me feel as desirable as Ben does. I've missed it. The way he looks at me, the way he touches me. The way he makes it feel as if my scars are an improvement rather than a flaw. It's hard to say no to this feeling, no matter how hurt I've been over what transpired last year. Ben, I whisper, not so much in protest as I intended for his name to sound. He buries his face against my neck and breathes me in, and I forget everything I was about to protest. My head drops back against the wall, and then his hand slides around to the back of my thigh. His fingers graze the edge of my panties, and when I feel them slip just beneath the hem, my whole body shudders. I'm forced to bury my face against his shoulder and grip the back of his shirt just to keep myself upright. All he did was touch my ass, and I feel like I can't even stand upright anymore. I should be embarrassed. He pulls back just a little bit so that he can glance over his shoulder. I don't know who or what he's looking for, but when he sees no one is behind us, he reaches to the right of me, to a door. He pulls on the handle and it relents. Ben doesn't waste a second. He grabs me by the waist and pushes me toward the door, into the dark room, and then the door closes behind us, muffling the sound of the music. Now I can hear how hard I'm breathing, panting really. But so is he. I can hear him right in front of me, but I can't see him. I hear him feeling around the room. It's pitch black, and the absence of the wall behind me and him in front of me makes me feel empty. But then his hands are back on my waist.
Storage room,
he says, pushing me until my back is to the door. Perfect. And then I feel his breath against my lips, followed closely by his mouth as it brushes against mine. As soon as I feel it, the surge of electricity that shoots from his mouth to every nerve in my body, I push against his chest. Stop! I tell him. My voice louder than it's been all night, thanks to the distance from the music. His hand is right back where it was before, grazing the edge of my panties, forcing my eyes shut like it would ever make a difference in here. I'm trying, he whispers, threading his hand that isn't up my skirt through the strands of my hair. He grips the nape of my neck. Ask me again. I open my mouth to say it again, but I'm met with heat and tongue and lips that know just how to make it all work together. Instead of the word stop coming at him, all he gets is a moan and a hand in his hair, pulling, pushing, indecisive. He pushes against me, his leg between both of mine. He's kissing me so hard, my mind is still wrapped around all the ways his tongue can move. Before I even notice, his hand has moved around to the front of my thigh. And I know I should stop him. I should push him away and make him explain himself. But his hand feels too good for that right now. My legs tense, and I grip the sleeve of his shirt with one hand while I pull on his hair with the other hand, tearing him away from my mouth so I can breathe. I take in one deep breath before he's back on my mouth, even hungrier than before. And his hand, oh God, his fingers are slowly tracing up the front of my panties. I moan again. Twice. He puts just enough space between our mouths so that he can listen to me gasp as he slides his hand down the front of my panties. My knees grow weak. I'm not sure I knew my body was capable of feeling these kinds of things. I think I just fell in love with my body a little bit more. Jesus, Fallon, Ben says, stroking me, breathing heavily against my mouth. You're so wet. As delicious as it feels to hear that, I can't help but laugh out loud. When I do, I quickly slap my hand over my mouth, but it's already too late. He heard my laughter in the midst of the most mind-blowing act of seduction I've ever been a part of. He drops his forehead to the side of my head, and I hear him laughing quietly. His mouth rests against my ear, and I swear I can hear the smile in his voice when he says, God, I've missed you so damn much. That one sentence affects me more than anything he said all night. And I don't know if it's because it felt like the old Fallon and Ben for a second, or if it's because he removes his hand and wraps his arms around me, pulling me into one of his soul-crushing embraces. His forehead rests against mine, and I almost wish he would have kept going with the physical stuff, because that's way easier than the emotional stuff. As good as it feels to be back in his arms again, I'm scared I'm screwing up. I don't know what to do. I don't know if I should let him back into my life so easily, because the getting together part should be just as hard as the letting go part, and this feels way too easy for him. I need time, I think. I don't know. I don't feel capable of making this kind of decision right now.
Fallon, he says, his voice low.
Yeah, I breathe out.
Come home with me.
I want to talk to you, but I don't want to do it here. We're back to this again. It makes me wonder if he's being so persistent because there's only a few hours left of November 9th, and he wants to make the most of it. Or if he wants me on all the other days, too. I feel behind me for the door handle. When I find it, I push against Ben's chest and pull the door open. When I slip outside, his hand is on my right elbow, and someone else grasps my left elbow. I gasp just as my eyes meet Amber's.
I was looking for you, she says. What are you doing in...
Her question comes to a halt when she sees Ben walk out behind me. And then, sorry to interrupt this reunion, but Teddy is worried about you. She's looking at me like she's disappointed in my decision to be making out in a dark closet with Ben while my date is in the same building. And oh my god, now that I think about it, that's a really shit thing to do.
Crap, I say. I have to get back to the table.
Ben makes a face like that's the last thing he expected to come out of my mouth. Good choice, Amber says, eyeing Ben. He can find me later. I have to get back to the table before Theodore realizes how pathetic I am. I follow Amber back to the booth, but luckily it's loud enough that I can't understand anything she's saying. I can tell she's lecturing me, though. We no more than slide back into the booth when Ben pulls up a chair and plops it down at the end of the table. He takes a seat and folds his arms in front of him. Theodore puts his arm around my shoulders and leans in.
You okay?
I force a quick smile and a nod, but I give him nothing more. Considering Ben looks like he's about to crawl over the table and rip Theodore's arm away from my body. I adjust myself so that Theodore doesn't think I'm reciprocating his affection. I lean forward away from his arm, as if I have something I want to say to Amber. Just as I open my mouth, Ben's hand strokes my knee beneath the table. My eyes swing to Ben's and he shoots me an innocent look. Luckily, Glenn steals Theodore's attention, so he doesn't notice when my entire body tenses. Ben begins to rake his fingers up my thigh, so I reach beneath the table and flick his hand away. He smiles and leans back in his seat.
So, Amber says, turning her attention toward Ben. Since we all just met you 15 minutes ago and know absolutely nothing about you since we've never been around you before because we're all complete strangers, why don't you tell us about yourself? What do you do? Theodore says you're a writer. Are you writing anything interesting? A love story, maybe? How's that going?
I kick Amber under the table. Could she be more obvious? Ben laughs, and now that Amber just spat out the most random question in the world, Theodore and Glenn are both staring at Ben, waiting for him to answer.
Well, Ben says, straightening up in his seat. As a matter of fact, yes, I am a writer. I've had a really bad case of writer's block this year, though. Really terrible. Haven't written a single word in 365 days. But, oddly enough, I think I just had a major breakthrough a few minutes ago.
Imagine that, Amber says, rolling her eyes.
I lean forward, deciding to join in on this cryptic conversation.
You know, Ben, Writer's block can be a tricky thing. Just because you had a breakthrough a few minutes ago doesn't mean it's permanent. He pretends to give my comment a moment of thought, but then he shakes his head.
No. No, I know a breakthrough when I have one. And I'm certain that what I experienced a few minutes ago was one of the most mind-blowing breakthroughs known to man.
I raise an eyebrow. There's a fine line between confidence and cockiness. Ben matches my expression as his hand returns to my leg under the table, causing me to stiffen. Well then, I'm straddling that line, like it's the thigh of a long-legged brunette.
Oh dear God, those words.
Glenn laughs, but Theodore leans forward to get Ben's attention.
I have an uncle back in Nantucket who had a book published. It's a pretty hard thing to...
Theodore, Ben says, interrupting him. You seem like a nice guy.
Thanks,
Theodore says, smiling.
Let me finish, Ben says, holding up a finger in warning. Because you're about to hate me. I lied. I'm not writing a paper.
He points at Glenn.
This guy told me earlier today where to show up tonight, so that I could find the girl I'm supposed to spend the rest of my life with. And I'm sorry, but that girl just so happens to be your date. And I'm in love with her. Like, really in love with her. Crippling, debilitating, paralyzing love. So please accept my sincerest apologies because she's coming home with me tonight. I hope. I pray.
Ben shoots me an endearing look.
Please. Otherwise, this speech will make me look like a complete fool, and that won't be good when we tell our grandkids about this.
He holds out his hand for me to take, but I'm as frozen in place as poor Theodore is. Glenn covers his mouth, trying to hide his drunken laughter. Amber is actually speechless for once.
What the fuck?
Theodore says. Before I can move out of his way, Theodore is reaching over me, grabbing the collar of Ben's shirt, pulling him close so that he can choke him or punch him or... I'm not sure what he's doing, but I duck and crawl out of the booth so I'm not in the middle of it. When I turn around, Theodore is on his knees in the booth, with Ben in a headlock over the table. Ben is grasping at Theodore's arm, trying to pull it away from his throat. His eyes are wide, and he's looking straight at me.
You fucking prick!
Theodore yells. Ben lets go of Theodore's arm with one hand and crooks his finger at me, wanting me to come closer. I take a hesitant step forward, not sure what to do to get him out of this mess. When I'm about 2 feet from them, Ben struggles to speak.
Fallon,
he says, still clawing at the arm that's wrapped around his neck.
Are you gonna come home with me or not?
Oh my God, he's relentless. And he's being pulled away from Theodore's chokehold by two bouncers who are intervening. But now both Ben and Theodore are being escorted outside, and Amber, Glenn, and I are following after them. Before we reach the door, Amber punches Glenn in the shoulder.
You told Ben where we were gonna be tonight? She hisses.
Glenn rubs his arm. He showed up at our apartment today looking for Fallon. Amber scoffs.
So you just told him where she would be? Why would you do that?
He's funny, Glenn says, as if that's a legit defense. Amber glances over her shoulder at me with an apologetic look. I don't tell her there's nothing to feel bad about. So far, I'm kind of glad Glenn told Ben where I'd be tonight. It makes me feel good that he waited at the restaurant for 4 hours, and then went looking for me at my old apartment, hoping Amber and Glenn still lived there. It's a little bit flattering, even though it still doesn't make up for what he put me through. As soon as we're outside, I immediately walk over to Theodore, who is pacing the pavement with a pissed-off look in his eye. He stops when he sees me standing in front of him, and he points in Ben's direction.
"Is that true?"
he says.
"Are the two of you, like, fuck, I don't know, what are you doing, dating exes? Do I even fit in the picture, or am I wasting my goddamn time?"
I shake my head, completely at a loss. I don't know how to answer that, because I honestly don't know where I stand with Ben. But I do know where I stand with Theodore, so I guess I'll start there. "I'm sorry," I say. "I swear, before tonight, I haven't spoken to him in a year. I don't want you to think I was seeing both of you at the same time, but I'm sorry, maybe I just need some time to figure it out, I guess." Theodore cocks his head as if he's shocked by what he just heard.
"Figure it out?"
He shakes his head.
"I don't have time for this shit."
He starts to walk in the opposite direction, but he's still within earshot when he mutters,
"You aren't even that pretty."
I'm still processing the insult when I see Ben sprint past me. Before my eyes can even adjust, his fist is flying. I see Glenn rush to intervene, but wait, no, Glenn also punches Theodore. Luckily, the bouncers never even made it back inside, and all three of them are separated before anyone is seriously injured. Theodore is struggling to break free from one of the bouncers, and he's yelling obscenities at Ben the entire time. Meanwhile, Amber is standing next to me, steadying herself on a parking meter while she unfastens one of her heels.
"I want every one of you to leave the premises right now before we call the police,"
one of the bouncers yells. "Hold on," Amber says, holding up a finger while she pulls off her shoe. "I'm not finished." She takes her shoe in her hand and glowers at Theodore, then rears back and throws it across the sidewalk, hitting him square between the legs.
"I hate your stupid pants, asshole," she yells. "Fallon deserves better than you, and so does Nantucket."
Wow. Go Amber. The bouncer holding Theodore asks him where his car is parked. He escorts Theodore in that direction as Amber retrieves her shoe. Ben and Glenn aren't released until the bouncer returns without Theodore.
"The four of you, leave. Now."
As soon as the bouncer releases Ben's arms, he runs straight toward me, taking my face in his hands, inspecting me to see if I'm hurt. Or maybe he's checking my emotions. I don't know. Either way, he looks worried.
"Are you okay?"
I can tell by the soothing sound of his voice that he's worried Theodore hurt my feelings. "I'm fine, Ben. That guy's insults about my appearance don't carry much weight when he's willingly wearing those pants." I can see the relief in Ben's smile as he kisses me on the forehead.
"Did you bring a car?"
Glenn asks, directing his question at Ben. Ben nods and says,
"Yeah, I'll give the two of you a ride home."
"The three of you," I say to Ben, insinuating that just because he stood up for me doesn't mean I'm automatically going home to his place. "I'll need you to drop me off at my apartment." Amber groans and then brushes my shoulder as she passes.
"Just forgive him already," she says. "Glenn found a member of the male species he actually likes, and if you don't forgive Ben,
You'll break Glenn's heart.
Ben and Glenn are both quietly staring at me. Glenn is giving me puppy dog eyes, and Ben's bottom lip is protruding. I can't even. I shrug my shoulder in defeat.
Well then, I guess if Glenn likes you, then that's that. I have to go home with you.
Ben doesn't even break eye contact with me when he holds out a stretched arm toward Glenn, his hand in a fist. Glenn bumps it, and then they drop their arms, never saying a word. As I pass Ben and head for the parking lot, I narrow my eyes at him and point.
You have a lot of explaining to do, though. A lot. And even more groveling.
I'm very capable of both those things, Ben says, following after me.
And you have to cook me breakfast, I add. I like well-done bacon and over-easy eggs.
Got it, Ben says. Explain myself, then grovel, then nakey-nakey eggs and bakey.
He puts his arm around my shoulder and redirects me to his car. He opens the passenger door for me, but before he climbs inside, he cups my face and presses his lips to mine. When he pulls back, I'm shocked by how much emotion is in his expression after the ridiculousness of the past 15 minutes.
You won't regret this, Fallon. I promise.
I hope not.
He kisses me on the cheek and waits for me to climb inside his car. Hands grasp my shoulders from behind, and Glenn's face appears next to mine from the back seat.
I promise too, he says,
giving me a loud smack on the cheek. As we pull out of the parking lot, I stare out my window, because I don't want the three of them to see the tears in my eyes. Because yes, hearing Theodore insult me didn't only hurt my feelings. It was easily one of the most embarrassing moments of my life. But knowing these three defended me without a second thought almost makes the insult worth it.
Ben. It's quiet after we drop Glenn and Amber off for at least a solid mile. She's been staring out the window the entire drive, and I wish she would look at me. I know what I put her through last year hurt her more than I can probably imagine, and I hope she realizes that I'm going to make it right. If it takes me the rest of my life, I'll make it right. I reach over and grab her hand. I need to apologize, I say to her. I shouldn't have said those things. She shakes her head, silently interrupting me. Don't take it back. I thought it was admirable that you were honest with Theodore. Most men would be too chicken to say anything and would just steal the girl behind their friend's back. She has no idea what I even feel bad about. I wasn't apologizing for that. I'm apologizing because I should have never said I was in love with you out loud like that, when the words weren't spoken directly to you. You deserve more than a secondhand I love you. She regards me silently, but then she looks out her window again. I look back at the road and then steal another glance in her direction. I can see her cheek lift in a smile as she squeezes my hand. Maybe if the explaining and groveling go well tonight, you can give the I love you another shot before you cook me breakfast tomorrow. I smile, because I know without a doubt the groveling and breakfast will be a piece of cake. It's the explaining that I'm dreading. We still have at least a 15-minute drive, so I decide to go ahead and get started. I moved out right after Christmas last year. Ian and I let Jordan and Oliver have the house. I can feel the tensing of her hand in mine just at the mention of Jordan's name. I hate that. I hate that I put that there, and I hate that it's always going to be in the back of her head for the rest of our lives. Because whether she wants it or not, Jordan is Oliver's mother, and Oliver is like a son to me. He'll always be in my life, no matter what. Would you believe me if I told you things are great with us? With me and Jordan? She gives me a sidelong glance. Great in what way? I pull my hand from hers and grip the steering wheel so that I can squeeze the tension from my jaw with my other hand. I want you to hear me out before you speak up, okay? Because I might say some things you don't want to hear, but I need you to hear them. She nods softly, so I inhale an encouraging breath. 2 years ago, when I made love to you, I gave everything to you, heart and soul. But then that night when you made the choice to go an entire year without seeing me again, I couldn't understand what had happened. I didn't understand how I could have felt what I felt when you felt nothing. And it fucking hurt, Fallon. You left and I was pissed, and I can't even tell you how hard those next few months were. I wasn't just grieving Kyle's death, I was grieving the loss of you. I stare straight ahead because I don't want to see what my words are doing to her. When Oliver was born, it was the first time I felt happy since the moment you showed up unannounced at my front door. And it was the first time Jordan smiled since Kyle died. So for the next few months, we spent every minute together with Oliver, because he was the only bright spot in either of our lives. And when two people both love someone as much as we love him, it creates this bond that I can't even explain. Over the next few months, she and Oliver became the things that filled the massive voids that you and Kyle had left in my heart. And I guess, in a way, I filled that void that Kyle had left in her heart. When things progressed between us, I don't even know if either of us gave it a prior thought before it happened. But it happened. And no one was there to tell me that I might regret it one day. I mean, there was even a part of me that believed you would be happy for me when we met up the following November, because I thought maybe that's what you wanted, was for me to move on and stop holding on to what you viewed as this fictionalized relationship we created when we were 18. But then when I showed up that day, the last thing I expected was for you to be hurt like that. And the second you figured out that I had been seeing Jordan, I could see in your eyes how much you really did love me. And it was one of the worst moments of my life, Fallon. One of the worst fucking moments. And I can still feel the wounds your tears left in my chest every time I breathe. I grip the steering wheel and blow out a steady breath. As soon as Jordan got home that night, she could see the heartache on my face. And she knew she wasn't the girl who put it there. And surprisingly, she wasn't that upset by it. We talked about it for probably 2 hours straight. About how I felt about you, and about how she felt about Kyle, and how we knew we were hurting ourselves by maintaining a relationship that would never equal what we'd both had with other people in the past. So we ended it, that day. I moved my stuff out of her room that night and back into mine until I was able to find a new place. I dare a look in her direction, but she's still staring out the window. I can see her swipe a tear from her eye, and I'm hoping I didn't make her mad. I'm not at all putting any of the blame on you, Fallon, okay? I only brought up that year you walked away because I need you to know that it was always you who had my heart, and I would have never let anyone else borrow it if I knew there was a chance in hell you'd ever want it back. I can see her shoulders shaking, and I hate that I'm making her cry. I hate it. I don't want her to be sad. She looks at me with eyes spilling over with tears. What about Oliver? She asks. You don't get to live with him anymore? She swipes at another tear. I feel awful, Ben. I feel like I took you away from your little boy. She covers her face with her hands and breaks out into sobs, and I can't take another second of it. I pull the car over to the side of the road and turn the hazards on. I unbuckle my seatbelt and reach across the seat and pull her to me. Baby, no, I whisper. Please don't cry about that. Me and Oliver, we're perfect. I see him whenever I want, almost every single day. I don't have to live with his mom to love him the same. I brush my hands through her hair and kiss the side of her head. It's good. Things are great, Fallon. The only thing not going right in my life is the fact that you aren't a part of it every single day. She pulls away from my shoulder and sniffs. That's the only thing not right in my life, Ben. Everything else is perfect. I have two of the best friends in the world. I love school. I love my job. I have 1.5 great parents. She says the last sentence with a laugh. But the only thing that makes me sad, the biggest thing, is that I think about you every second of every day, and I don't know how to get over you. Don't, I beg her. Please don't get over me. She shrugs with a half-hearted smile. I can't. I tried, but I think I'd have to go to AA or something. You're just a part of my chemical makeup now, I think. I laugh, relieved that she simply exists, and that we were lucky enough to exist in the same lifetime, in the same area of the world, in the same state. And that, after all these years, I surprisingly wouldn't change a single thing about what ultimately brought us together. Ben, she says, you look like you're about to be sick again. I laugh and shake my head. I'm not. I just really need to tell you I love you, but I feel like I should warn you before I do that. Okay, she says. Warn me about what? That by agreeing to love me back, you're taking on a huge responsibility. Because Oliver is going to be a part of my life forever. And I'm not talking like an uncle and a nephew, but like he's mine. Birthday parties and baseball games, and she puts her hand over my mouth to shut me up. Loving someone doesn't just include that person, Ben. Loving someone means accepting all the things and people that person loves, too. And I will. I do. I promise. I really don't deserve her. But I pull her to me and slide her between myself and the steering wheel. I pull her mouth to mine and I say, I love you, Fallon. More than poetry, more than words, more than music, more than your boobs, both of them. Do you have any idea how much that amounts to? She laughs and cries at the same time, and I press my lips to hers, wanting to remember this kiss more than any other kiss I've given her. Even though it only lasts 2 seconds, because she pulls back and says, I love you too. And I think that was a stellar explanation, one that doesn't even need much groveling, so I'd like to go back to your apartment now and make love to you. I kiss her quick, and then push her back to her side of the car while I prepare to pull back out onto the highway. She puts her seatbelt on and says, but I still expect breakfast tomorrow. So technically, we've only spent about 28 total hours together since we met, she says. We're in my bed. She's draped across me, running her fingers up my chest. As soon as we got back to the apartment, I made love to her. Twice. And if she doesn't stop touching me like this, it's about to happen a third time. That's more than enough time to know if you love someone, I say. We've been counting how much total time we've actually spent together over the course of 4 years. I honestly thought it would amount to more than that because it sure does feel like it, but she was right when she said it wouldn't even equal 2 total days. Look at it this way, I say, breaking it down even more. If we would have had a traditional relationship, we would have gone out on a few dates, maybe 1 or 2 a week, lasting a few hours each. That's an average of only 12 hours in the first month. So you have a couple of overnight dates in the second month. Couples could easily be well into their 3rd month of dating by the time they spend 28 total hours together. And 3 months is the quintessential month for I love yous. So technically, we're right on track. She bites her lip to stop her grin. I like your logic. You know how much I dislike insta-love. Oh, it was still insta-love, I tell her. But ours is legit. She lifts up onto her elbow, staring down at me. When did you know? Like, which second did you know for sure you were in love with me? I don't even hesitate. Remember when we were kissing on the beach and I sat up and told you I wanted to get a tattoo? She smiles. It was so random, how could I forget? That's why I got the tattoo, because I knew in that moment that I had fallen in love with a girl for the first time. Like, real love, selfless love. And my mother told me once that I would know the second I found selfless love, and that I should do something to remember that moment because it doesn't happen for everyone. So, yeah. She picks up my wrist and looks down at my tattoo. She traces it with her index finger. You got this because of me? She asks, glancing back up at me. But what does it mean? Why did you choose the word poetic and a music staff? I glance down at my tattoo and wonder if I should really go into detail with her about why I picked it. But that moment would darken this one, and I don't want that. Personal reasons, I say, forcing a smile. And I'll tell you about them one day, but right now I kind of want you to kiss me again. It doesn't take 10 seconds before I have her on her back and I'm buried deep inside her. I make love to her slowly this time, not in a wild rush like we did twice before. I kiss her, from her mouth to her breasts and back up again, softly pressing my lips against every inch of skin that I have the privilege of touching. And this time when we finish, we don't talk afterward. We both close our eyes, and I know that when I wake up next to her tomorrow morning, I'm going to make it my mission to forgive myself for all the times I withheld the truth from her in the past. After I make her breakfast.
Fallon. My stomach growls, reminding me that I never even ate dinner last night. I quietly roll out of bed and search for my clothes, but after locating my skirt, I come up empty. I don't want to turn on the light to find my shirt, so I walk to Ben's closet to search for a t-shirt or something to throw on while I go raid his refrigerator. I feel like an idiot, searching blindly in his closet for a shirt, with a smile on my face. But when I woke up this morning, I never expected the day to end this way. Absolutely perfect. I decide to shut the door behind me and flip on the light so it doesn't disturb him. I locate a thin, soft t-shirt and pull it off the hanger. After I get it over my head, I go to flip off the light, but something catches my eye. On the top shelf, next to a shoebox, is a thick stack of pages. It looks like a manuscript. Could it be? My curiosity is piqued. I stretch on my tiptoes until I can reach it, but I can only pull off the top page just to see what it is. November 9, by Benton James Kessler. I stare at the sheet for several seconds, long enough to wage a full-on war with my conscience. I shouldn't read this. I should put it back. But I have a right to read it. I think. I mean, it's about my relationship with Ben. And I know he said he didn't want me to read it until it was finished. But now that he's no longer writing it, surely that cancels out his one and only rule. I still haven't decided what to do when I take the entire manuscript off the shelf. I'll take it to the kitchen, I'll get something to eat, and then I'll decide what to do with it. I flip off the light switch and slowly open the closet door. Ben is in the same position, breathing heavily, on the verge of what could be considered a snore. I walk out of his bedroom and into his kitchen. I carefully place the manuscript on the table in front of me. I don't know why my hands are shaking. Maybe because his true thoughts about me and us and everything we've been through is all right here in front of me, and what if I don't like his truth? People have a right to privacy, and what I'm about to do is violating every bit of his privacy. It's not a good way to start out a relationship. What if I just read one scene? Just a couple of pages, and then I'll put it back and he'll never know. I already know what I want to read about. Since the moment it happened, it's been eating at me. I want to know why Kyle punched him in the hallway during our second year together. It had nothing to do with me, so that should be a safe enough scene to read without feeling too guilty about it afterward. I do my best to flip through the manuscript without absorbing any of the sentences. Ben makes it easy to find, considering he's divided up the chapters by his age. The fight happened the second year we were together, so I find the chapter labeled Age 19, and I pull it in front of me. I skip through his internal dialogue while he waited at the restaurant for me to show up. Hopefully one day he'll let me read this because I'm dying to know his true thoughts. But I refuse to read all of it. Compromising with my guilt by just reading a few pages still makes me feel like shit. I can imagine how I'd feel if I read the entire thing. My eyes skim over the page until I see Kyle's name. I pull the page in front of me and begin reading in the middle of a paragraph.
Everything will be fine, Jordan, I promise. The front door opens and she looks up. I can see by the excitement in her eyes that it's more than likely Kyle. My stomach turns from the nerves that have just become heavier than rocks. Fuck. He said he wouldn't be home until after 7 tonight. Is that Kyle? I ask Jordan. She nods, pushing past me. He took off early to help me, she says, walking to the sink. She grabs a napkin and dabs at her eyes. Tell him I'll be right out. I don't want him to know how much I've been crying today. I feel like such a spaz. Shit. Maybe he won't remember. It's been so long now and we've never talked about it. I take a deep breath and head back into the living room, trying to hide the panic. He can't ruin this for me. All is well with Jordan, I say as I re-enter the living room, hoping to play off my nerves. I stop short when I see him, because the look on his face lets me know he definitely remembers, and he's pissed. Kyle's jaw hardens. He tosses his keys onto the entry table and points at me. We need to talk. At least he's pulling me away from Fallon to discuss it. That's a relief. It doesn't look like he'll be saying anything in front of her. I can deal with him in private. That's not an issue. I can fight my way out of the shit I've gotten myself into, but the last thing I want is for Fallon to be brought into it. I smile at Fallon because I can tell by the look on her face that she's aware something is off with Kyle. I want to reassure her that everything is okay, even though it's so far from it. Be right back. She nods, so I follow Kyle down the hallway. He stops just outside his bedroom door. He points in the direction of the living room. Can you please explain to me what the fuck is happening? I glance back at the living room, wondering how I can possibly talk my way out of this. But I know there's nothing he'll believe other than the truth. I put my hands on my hips and look down at the floor. The disappointment in his eyes is hard to see. We're friends, I tell him. I met her last year, at a restaurant. Kyle releases a disbelieving laugh. Friends? He says. Because Ian just introduced her as your fucking girlfriend, Ben. Shit. I do what I can to diffuse his temper. I've never seen him this angry. I swear it's not like that, I just... Damn it, this is so fucked up. I throw my hands up in defeat. I like her, okay? I can't help it. It's not like that's what I set out to do. Kyle looks away, running his hands down his face in frustration. When he turns around again, I'm not prepared for what happens. He pushes me, hard, and I slam into the wall behind me. His hands are pressed against my shoulders, and he's pinning me against the wall. Does she know, Ben? Does she have any idea that you're the one who started that fire? That you're the reason she almost died? I feel my jaw tighten. He can't do this. Not today. Not to her. Shut up, I say through clenched teeth. Please, she's in the other room for Christ's sake. I try to push him off me, but he shoves his arm against my throat. What kind of fucked up situation did you get yourself in, Ben? Are you an idiot? Just as the question leaves his mouth, I see her walk around the corner. She stops short as she takes in the scene, and the shock that appears on her face reassures me that she didn't hear anything else.
Fallon. I slam the pages back on top of the others. He's fucked up. Ben is a twisted, fucked up writer. How dare he take something real, something that I suffered through, and turn it into fiction with a ridiculous plotline? I'm pissed. How could he do this? But then again, he didn't finish it, so... am I even allowed to be angry? But why would he do this? Doesn't he know how personal that story is to me? I can't believe he would try to capitalize on such an awful tragedy.
I'd almost like it better if he was telling the truth and he really did start the fire. At least then I wouldn't feel like he was taking advantage of my story. Why would he make up part of the fight when everything else surrounding the fight between him and Kyle actually happened? Did he even make up any of it at all? I laugh at myself. It's not true. He didn't meet me until 2 years after the fire. There was no way he could have been there. Besides, what are the chances he would run into me on the anniversary of the fire exactly 2 years later? He would have had to have been following me. He wasn't following me. Was he? I need water. I get water. I need to sit down again. I sit down. Spin, spin, spin. The web of possible lies is spinning. My mind is spinning. My stomach is spinning. It even feels like the blood in my veins is spinning. I stack the pages of the manuscript back into a neat and tidy pile just as I found them. Why would you write this, Ben? I look at the cover and run my fingers over the title. November 9. He needed a good plot. Is that what he's done? He just fabricated his plot line? There's no way he could be responsible for the fire. It makes absolutely no sense. My father is to blame. He knows, the police know, and I know it. I find myself lifting the cover page off the stack. I stare down at the first page of the manuscript, and I do the only thing I can to find more answers. I read.
November 9, by Benton James Kessler. To begin at the beginning. Dylan Thomas. Prologue. Every life begins with a mother. Mine is no different. She was a writer. I'm told my father was a psychiatrist, but I wouldn't know for sure since I never had the chance to ask him. He died when I was 3. I have no memory of him, but I suppose it's for the best. It's hard to grieve people you don't remember. My mother had a master's degree in poetry and completed her thesis on the Welsh poet Dylan Thomas. She quoted him often, although her most favorite quotes weren't from his world-famous poetry, but rather from his everyday dialogue. I never could tell if she respected Dylan Thomas as a poet or a person, because from what I've learned about him in my research, there wasn't much to respect about his character. Or maybe that's what is to be respected, the fact that Dylan Thomas did little to gain popularity as a person, and everything to gain it as a poet. I suppose I should get on with how my mother died. I should probably also get on with how a girl who inspired me to write this book relates to a story that begins with my mother. And I suppose if I get on with both of those things, I should also get on with how Dylan Thomas relates to my mother's life, most importantly, her death, and how both led me to Fallon. It seems so complicated, when in fact, it's very simple. Everything relates. Everything is connected. And it all begins on November 9th. 2 years before I came face to face with Fallon O'Neill for the very first time. November 9th. The first and last time my mother would die. November 9th. The night I intentionally started the fire that almost claimed the life of the girl who would one day save mine.
Fallon. I stare at the pages in front of me in complete disbelief. Bile rushes up the back of my throat. What have I done? I swallow hard to force it back down and it stings. What kind of monster did I give my heart to? My hands are shaking. I'm unable to move. I can't decide if I need to read more. To get to the next page where it's obviously going to state that everything I read is a work of Ben's magnificent yet twisted imagination, that he found a way to make our story marketable by mixing fact and fiction. Do I read more?
Or do I run? How can I run from someone I've slowly given myself to over the course of 4 years? Or is it 6? Has he known me since I was 16? Did he know me?